Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Leona Brando, New Vision Organization, and also Shedding Light Online Blog Talk Radio. We are going to be welcoming back our guest, Joe Kay, for his fourth series of seven on injustice, inequality, targeting, and treatment of incarcerated individuals versus the wealthy in the free world. Former criminal justice advocate, now famed author, Joe G. Kay, has been shedding light through his book, The Crime of Impunity, The Crime of Punishment. Prisoners are citizens of this country who have made mistakes and are serving their sentences for their offenses. They are still human beings and deserve to be treated as such. Yet the government leaders, many of whom have also committed crimes, take it upon themselves to hand out the harshest of sentences for the poor, people of color, and other disadvantaged men, women, and children. Joe sheds light on the problems the disadvantaged individuals in society are facing, subsequent to a system of wealthy, famed, and corrupt groups and large corporations who have managed to escape the consequences of their own crimes. So we welcome today, once again, and anyone is welcome to call in. There will be more series following this one, and the call-in number is 657-383-1630. We welcome callers, and we have a guest that is so unique. He is very informative. He has been working in the criminal justice field for so long. He has so much to share and welcomes questions and feedback. And we now have you on the line, Joe.
Okay.
How are you today?
Doing fine. How are you, Leona?
Good. I really appreciate you taking the time for these weekly series. It's been so informative, so interesting.
It's my pleasure. So I had a few points I wanted to make, and because I'm a better writer than I am a speaker, if I could take the liberty of reading a couple of these sections from my book, I would appreciate that.
Yes.
So one of the issues that I wanted to talk about today had to do with rehabilitation. And picking up from the middle of my section on that, I say, what is the definition of rehabilitation according to both liberals and right-wingers? It's learning to, quote, fit in, to be satisfied with a low-paying, menial job, to live out one's existence without making waves, and to sink into the likely premature grave silently without fuss. Both right-wingers and liberals agree that special encouragement should be given to those rare individuals of exceptional ability to help them, quote, make it, and thereby become a role model for children. But be sure not to teach those children enough mathematics to figure out what their own real odds are. The liberal solutions are truly feeble, for while acknowledging the social roots of street crime, their main focus is on individual rather than social rehabilitation. For social rehabilitation can only come about through political struggle. Even personal rehabilitation, if we are speaking of significant numbers, can only come about through political struggle. And here we are speaking the kind of personal rehabilitation that lies along the road taken by Malcolm X. That kind of rehabilitation requires a political understanding of the nature of our society, an ability to identify the real victims and the real victimizers. This is the kind of personal rehabilitation that is contagious, that spreads among the incarcerated and beyond. The first step in this rehabilitation process involves the stripping away of self-hate. It involves waking up to the fact that those who engage in street crime are not morally inferior, but rather that it is those at the top the eminently successful and respectable who are the real degenerates. The second step in genuine rehabilitation, again using Malcolm X as a model, is to act on one's new awareness, to help spread that awareness and to work to destroy those anti-human forces which, while oppressing black people in ways that are particularly vicious, are standing on the necks of the great majority of all people. The struggle to completely overhaul society does not mean ignoring the need for immediate reforms. We do not deny the importance of demanding that all who come out of prison be furnished with paid training that leads to a guaranteed living wage job, be given affordable housing, free, high-quality health care, etc. But for such demands to be more than just pious wishes, they must be backed up by a mass movement whose goal is real people power. So it is society that needs rehabilitation.
That's a good way to look at it, because that's true. I remember, was it Hillary Clinton that said it takes a village to raise a child? And actually, society is not only, they are not only the ones that would make a positive effect, but they're also part of the problem. It's because they judge, a lot of these people judge without even knowing the facts, knowing everything that's going on. And they listen to the media, they listen to law enforcement, they listen to, as they say, in the courts, the prosecutors. You know, these are all people that set them up. They make all kinds of excuses, and they try to make it look much worse than it is so that they can continue to do what they're doing.
You used a magic term there. You just said set them up, and that's exactly what I said to a group of formerly incarcerated men in Harlem a couple of years ago when I had the occasion to be able to speak to them. I said to them that they were set up. And a young man, he retorted to me, "No, I haven't been set up," he said. "I did it. I did the crime." But an older gentleman responded to him and said, and explained what being set up really means. And I address that in a section that I talk in a section called "Am I Trivializing Street Crime?" May I proceed to that?
Please.
So, you know, because the whole book shows how I compare the horrible crimes committed by the elite, the mass murder, the millions of deaths and injuries, and I go through it, you know, through one section of society after another, and then I point out, for example, that one crime committed by a Wall Street firm was responsible for the loss of more money than all the robberies in history in this country. So then the question, some people would say, well, am I trivializing street crime? And I would say you may be implying that murder and other violent crimes are petty. I don't regard such crimes as petty.
Yeah.
But I demand that such crimes be judged according to a single standard alongside the crimes of the elite, proportionate to the social damage inflicted. The perpetrator of street crime often harms himself as well as those he victimizes. His crimes are usually self-defeating and harmful also to his family and his community. This in contrast to the elite criminals, for whom there is little prospect of punishment. Not only do their crimes build up their personal wealth, but they add to that of their families, their associates, and their communities. And in the end, one of the fruits of their criminal acts is a bountiful estate claimed as a matter of right by their posterity. Crime doesn't pay? With the rarest of exceptions, it always pays if it is committed on a grand enough scale. So while we do not justify street crime, we refuse to moralize about it, to speak of street criminals as so-called offenders or ex-offenders, to urge that they make the, quote, right choices, to preach the need for them to pursue a more upright life and follow a spiritual compass, etc. The alienation, rage, and rebelliousness which is widespread among the oppressed, particularly among the youth, and which in part manifests itself in street crime, is a perfectly natural response to their cruel and humiliating conditions. Certain psychological qualities to be found in the hood, qualities feared and hated by many whites and even sections of the black middle class, are actually indispensable for resisting the injustice of their lives. What is required, however, is the harnessing of those qualities in the service of the struggle for social change. This oppressive system is both built on an ideology of rugged individualism, but genuine liberation cannot be attained by personal redemption, by stepping over the community. This may lead to the rare and necessarily rare individual success, but it leaves the community mired in the same wretched condition. Again, the only road to freedom is through collective struggle. But the struggle for the advancement of communities of color and for their empowerment, especially of the African-American community, is inseparable from the struggle for democracy for all, for a secure and prosperous life for the vast majority of all communities, for an end to the destructive domination by a handful over all communities. It's not an easy road, often frustrating, requiring great sacrifice, and while there are many drawbacks to traveling this road, it has but one advantage. It is the only road that will lead to freedom, not a freedom on paper, but real freedom, a road that will lead to a society that is truly fit for human beings.
It's very interesting. You know what I say is, when you mention society, I can't understand why so many people have such hatred in them. I mean, towards not only people of color, but just that hatred. They have to be pretty miserable to have that kind of hatred, to want somebody, just like putting them in prisons. It's almost like putting them in prison is not enough. They want to torture them. They want to make them pay. They want to, every single day that these prisoners are in a cage, it's more torture. And then when the elite do get to the point where they can't get out of something that they have done, and the Murdoch case, when it gets to the point where they have to go to prison, they get to be in a protected prison, you know, something where there's not going to be other prisoners in the community. I think they should all be in the same type of prisons. They should all go through the same situations, and they should be mandated to serve the same type of sentences. And these are the things that you mentioned, even in your book. You talk about the environmental law, you talk about the domestic, you talk about the drug war, you talk about all these different issues in the book. And you compare them, and I see exactly what's going on with it, because that's exactly what's happening.
By the way, you mentioned Bernie Madoff, right?
That's it.
So
that's the one.
He went to prison, all right, but he didn't go to prison for ripping off you and me. He went to prison because he robbed his fellow elite.
Exactly.
He conned his rich, even relatives and friends and people in his religious society and so on, all very well to do. And that, of course, is unforgivable. Then you have to pay for that.
And
but you can
difference.
Rip off, destroy the lives of poor and ordinary, even middle-class people, and that's nothing bad is going to happen to you.
That's it. It's almost as though if you have the money, then you have that power. You have the same. You're on the same page. You're on the same wavelength, and you can't get out of it because you are robbing your peers, who, like you say, are the elite. But when it comes to robbing the poor, which is happening all the time, these corporations, they're actually stealing. They're robbing the poor, but yet they don't get in trouble, as you say. They're free from it. And you mentioned something on the interview yesterday about the prisoners should be allowed to vote, regardless of whether they're former prisoners or they're still incarcerated. And I totally agree with that, because in order to get the right people in office, we have to get people that are able to vote, that can actually benefit from it, not only benefit from getting the right people in, but also getting the benefits of what these people will provide them with. And one of them is rehabilitation.
You know, it's not just the people in prison who can't vote, but even after you get out, after you so-called paid your price to society, paid your debt to society, you still can't vote in many cases if you're a felon. Now, in some states, they have made it easier, but it's still made it possible, but it's still so difficult. You have to go through hoops to try to get your vote back. And voting is supposed to be the most elementary right of a citizen. And we're not talking about a few thousand. We're talking about millions and millions of people, predominantly of color. And in the book, by the way, I go into a history of the disenfranchisement of black people. So it's all part and parcel of that same long, dreary record of making sure, and of course now they're involved in the suppression of the black vote and brown vote. In state after state, they're coming up with all kinds of rules to discourage people of color from voting. And part of that same campaign is to keep those who are in prison or who have been in prison and served some felony conviction, to prevent them from voting. It's all part of the same thing, part of the history of this country, the racist history.
It's crazy. The whole thing is crazy. But there are advocates out there that are pushing and working on trying to make changes. Again, as you mentioned with these politicians, they do a lot of talking, no action. And then when it's time for votes, they want to – I mean, my emails get flooded sometimes with these politicians that are getting ready to run for campaign themselves or whatever, and they're trying to get votes. They're trying to get us to vote for them. And I just delete everything. I really do, because it's a farce. You know, what they're doing when they're not running for anything, when they don't need those votes, they're just like the elite. They are the elite. They're just as unconcerned about these issues as and that's why I say Republicans and Democrats alike. They don't care until it's time to get the votes, and then everything changes. They want the votes. They promise you the world. There was a gas explosion in Massachusetts, and they're saying that it will definitely be resolved by the 19th of November. Well, they make it a day after the election. These are the things that happen. And I'm sure Trump's promising so much, too, after the elections. And these are the things that go on. And it's really so funny, because if people think about when the election day is coming, what day is it? It's November 18th, I believe. And yet everything that they're promising to have it on the 19th or after the 18th, because it's not going to happen. But at least people are going to think, oh, they're doing something, which they're not.
Here's a trick of the politicians. Oftentimes a politician will say, I support such and such, and I'll even vote for it. You know, something good for the people. He makes that promise knowing that there's still a majority against it, so it ain't going to happen. So what he's doing is, or she, is to like say, you see, I'm a good guy, but it's never really put to the test where his vote would really make the difference. So it's a cheap promise. He knows it's not going to happen, but he gets your vote that way. I wanted to just sort of read the conclusion of the book, if I may.
Yes.
Our justice system, both criminal and civil, is an injustice system. By the way, everybody says that who was conscious at all. But this understanding is not sufficient. What is key to the realization is the realization that it is a class justice system designed to protect the lives, property, and rule of the oligarchy, who consider the racist character and other inequities not shameful, but invaluable. The criminal justice system props up the criminal social system. Oppression of the poor, of people of color, and especially of African Americans, is vital to the maintenance of elite power, and the inequities of the criminal justice system can neither be understood nor addressed without understanding and addressing the social structure as a whole. Therefore, efforts at criminal justice reform will prove ultimately futile if they are not part of larger efforts at fundamental social change. And such change is coming, for when people become aware of their real interests, then the very idea of a small gang owning and controlling the vast resources of the country and those of the rest of the world, including the people's labor, the very idea of that gang having the right to appropriate for themselves what is produced by the physical and mental efforts of others will be seen as the moral obscenity, the crime that it is. And so when the people are in charge, this barbaric state of affairs will come to an end, and all the corporate elite and their henchmen, all the media owners who themselves are part of the corporate elite, all the politicians who are simply the tools of the corporate elite, and whose main job it is to throw sand in the eyes of the people, in a word, who are nothing but glorified con men, along with the whole army of professors and pundits, the well-fed clergy, all the ideologues whose job it is to demonstrate through learned books, or else just the one good book, that black is white and white black, that slavery is freedom and freedom slavery, all the hordes of government officials and bureaucrats who administer unjust laws or who administer just laws in an unjust way, all these parasites will have to go out and find an honest living. And when the people are in charge, it will not simply mean casting a vote every so many years. Rather, the people will be actively involved in planning their own future and then helping to execute those plans, from the neighborhood up to the national level. In short, one day, all the things we now can only lament as a crying shame will be dealt with as a shameful crime. And when that great day arrives, then the gates will swing open for the vast majority of the so-called degenerates, animals, the criminal element, now languishing in our dungeons. Then a truly people's government will work to meet the needs and aspirations of the imprisoned, formerly imprisoned, and those who would ordinarily be heading for prison, needs which are, after all, only the normal needs and aspirations of all people. Unfortunately, a prison population will remain, but this population will be largely composed of our formerly esteemed members of society, the leeches battening on the labor of others, the pathological liars known as politicians, and the higher-ups of so-called law enforcement. In other words, the upper crust will be toast. But being optimistic by nature, I believe it will be possible to rehabilitate such antisocial deviants, in spite of the fact that most of them are hardened career criminals. I believe these offenders can be reclaimed through education, a program of honest labor, and proper socialization. When we say that the wrong people are in prison, it's not that all current prisoners are innocent, although because of their poverty and color, many have been falsely convicted, or at least given more time than would have been the case had they greater resources and a white skin. The wrong people are in prison because while the crimes committed by street criminals are for the most part perpetrated out of the need to survive or out of a righteous resentment and a keen sense of the social injustice which they see no way of overcoming, the crimes of the privileged are perpetrated with a sense of entitlement and expectation of impunity. We have frequently referred to the elite's insatiable greed, for in a certain sense, we have been unfair. Their greed, while indisputable, does not stem from some moral defect, for their predatory behavior is dictated by their social and economic position. In the fiercely competitive dog-eat-dog, shark-eat-sardine world that is this system, to allow sentiments of humanity, compassion, fairness, etc., to enter into business decisions would be suicidal. For example, in order to stay in business, every company not only does but must rob its workers, for its profits are derived from paying its workers less than the value that those workers produce. If this were not the case, there'd not be any purpose in hiring them in the first place. A famous French thinker once said that property is theft, and it is in the above sense that he is absolutely correct. Thus, larceny is at the very heart of our system. It's what makes the system tick.
That is awesome. One of the things I almost disagree with you on, though, is that they can be rehabilitated, the elite, these people that will someday be in on the inside. I wonder if they could actually be rehabilitated with education, because I'm sure they know now.
I agree with you. I was being charitable. You're absolutely right. But what we can do is take the incentive from them to continue committing those crimes. They'll have no way of being able to do it, even when they get out of prison.
But another thing is, as you say, we are the people. We are the government. And if we need to, take over as the people, because unless that happens, I don't know if there'll ever be a positive change. But I don't know. This government is just, it's almost like, or not the system itself of the elite, the wealthy. There's just no understanding whatsoever. And the ones that do have the understanding are the ones that are racist. As you say, they're hardened. Their hearts are very hard. And these are the type of people that, how can they run a country and serve all of the constituents in this country if there's such biases? You know,
So I'm not interested in reforming or educating those people on the top. What our job is to educate the people, the ordinary people, because they're the ones who are suffering. They're the ones whose interests are not being served. And once they come to understand that, they'll take the proper action.
I hope so. I hope that they can get the help they need, because it's so unfair what they're going through now. And so many of them are just always feeling so low and almost ready to give up because they don't see an end to all of this.
Nope.
And it's not just serving. If they were serving their time and able to do the programs that they are entitled to, they probably could survive and satisfied. But they're prevented from a lot of the programs. They pick and choose who they want to give these jobs to, who they want to allow to take these educational courses. But, Joe, we'd like to have you come back next week.
What day is that?
The 11th and 12th, Thursday and Friday.
Okay. I'll see you
okay,
then.
Okay, same time.
And thank you.
We want to get this series up to 7 series, and I put a call-in number for everyone to call in, and the call-in number will be 657-383-1630. We'd like to have your feedback and any questions you may have for Joe. And Joe, again, we thank you for being on the show with us. You have been a blessing.
Can you repeat that number? Me too.
Yes. 657-383-1630.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Joe. And we welcome you next Thursday and Friday.
Thank you, Anna. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.